Phil, Sunday, 8:25 p.m.
Guilt washes away any excitement. I gave my mom a G-rated report on my date with Kareem. I wonder what Hina told her. She has not stopped talking about Kareem and his proper Indian manners since I got home. To my relief, and at my insistence, he promised not to ask my parents' permission for any future dates. Best to take my mother out of the equation. But that's also the trouble. The future. I committed to seeing Kareem again, and I do want to see him. But I also wonder if I'll be picturing Phil while Kareem kisses me. It's pretty crappy, especially for Kareem. Maybe not so much for me. Are you ghosting me? Phil, Sunday, 8:27 p.m. Sorry, I spaced for a second. No worries. So yes or no? Phil, Sunday, 8:27 p.m. Where will these swimming miracles occur? It's a secret. Phil, Sunday, 8:28 p.m. A secret? No. Tell me. Trust me. Phil, Sunday, 8:28 p.m. I pull my hands away from my keyboard. Take the leap of faith, Maya. Suck the marrow out of life. Fine. I'll pick you up at 11, swimsuit optional. Phil, Sunday, 8:30 p.m. Ha ha. I should be thrilled, but I imagine I'll either sink like a stone or flail like a clown. In front of Phil. It's impossible to be cute or aloof while thrashing around in abject fear of drowning. But I don't need to be cute or aloof. Do I? Phil still has a girlfriend. There is no doubt about this. I wanted there to be doubt. I admit it. But Violet and I literally ran into the depressing, irrefutable PG-rated evidence of Phil's and Lisa's still-kissing coupledom. I can't imagine how Lisa will feel about these secret swimming lessons. Phil would be an idiot to tell her, even if all our interactions are G-rated. Another wave of guilt crashes into me, but it doesn't knock me over. I walk over to my dresser and dig out the red bikini Violet compelled me to buy. She sees these swimming lessons as my opportunity to nudge Lisa out of the way and assume my rightful place on Phil's arm. She also knows about Kareem, of course. She is thrilled at how romantically frazzled this situation makes me. She lives for this stuff. Damn it! I need to wax. Fortunately, almost any household with an Indian woman is well-stocked with depilation products. Big surprise, my mom's never once spoken to me about sex. She's never even uttered the word. But she's covered all the bases regarding ablution, hair removal, and the power of kajal, the sooty black eyeliner favored by generations of South Asian women. During our first kajal demonstration, I poked myself in the eye. Mom heaved the dramatic sigh of a mother from an Indian movie whose daughter desires to marry a simple peasant instead of the rich, suitable suitor. You cannot mess with her kajal. It's only 9 p.m., but I'm exhausted. As I climb into bed, my mom knocks on the door. Naturally, she barges in before I can respond. "See? I knocked," she says. "But you didn't wait for me to..."
"Why are you always making things difficult, Maya?" she interrupts. "I'm your mother. You don't have to hide anything from me."
The irony makes me squirm. "What do you want, Mother?" I groan. My mom isn't always the best at picking up on my subtleties, but she knows that Mother equals annoyed, Mom is for regular days, and the Urdu, Ummi, for increasingly rare moments of filial affection. She sits on the edge of my bed.
No need to be so upset, Beta.
I'm sorry. I can't stand it when you and Dad treat me like a child.
But you are our child.
Her voice catches.
You always will be, even when you have children of your own.
My mom's eyes moisten. I quickly turn away. I'm never quite sure what to do in these uncomfortable moments, so usually I pretend they aren't happening.
I know, Mom, but can you please give me my privacy?
She sniffs.
I just wanted to ask if Karim called you today.
Mom,
can't a mother ask a simple question?
Not if it's a nosy one. I already told you everything anyway. Dinner was nice. He was nice.
And?
That's it. End of story. We didn't secretly get engaged or anything. My mom tilts her head to the ceiling and raises her hands to prayer position. This is her being sarcastic, but also totally serious.
I don't want you to end up alone.
I'm in high school, Mom, in the 21st century. I don't have to get married by the time I'm 22 or risk becoming an old maid.
Are, Beta? Who is saying anything about marriage? We want you to finish your studies. But I was married when I was only a few years older than you.
Classic Mom again. I'm not saying you should follow my precise example, but of course I really am. I have to laugh. And you had a love marriage that Dad's parents didn't exactly approve of, right? She gives me a sharp look.
Listen to you. We raised you with too much American independence. Talking back to your elders. And all this privacy business. Who needs privacy from their parents?
The best way to get out of this conversation is to keep my mouth shut. I totally know this. Yet apparently I prefer to bang my head against the wall over and over because I think arguing can change my mother's mind. Note to self, it can't. It never has.
Please, all I'm asking is that you give me a little space. If Karim and I decide to get married, I promise you'll be the first to know.
My mom stands and shakes her head.
We should have sent you to a boarding school in India. Then you would have learned to be a good daughter, not like these ungrateful girls here who can't cook and don't know how to show proper respect to their parents. Some even marry white American boys.
She means boys like Phil. Boys you secretly tutor and meet for surreptitious swimming lessons. Shiny-eyed, beautiful boys that can pull you in the wrong direction. I fake a huge yawn.
Can you continue your marriage pep talk another day? I swear I won't run off and marry a heathen tonight.
She heads toward the door.
What are you doing tomorrow?
My pulse quickens as I make up an alibi. Sleep in. Then maybe go to a movie or the mall if any of my friends are around. When is your last appointment?
Your dad scheduled a root canal at 5 p.m., so we won't be home until later.
Okay. Kudafis. Have a good day at work in case I don't see you in the morning.
Kudafis, Beta.
My mom tosses me a final wan smile. I love you, but I remain disappointed, and shuts the door. I settle beneath the covers. If I ever direct a retro Bollywood melodrama, my mother will be the star. The guard straightens the back of his navy blue baseball cap with his left hand, curving the bill with his right.
Stitched in bold white letters on the front is security, but the cap's newness screams rookie. He is younger than most of the other men on the crew, eager to prove his seriousness. He rarely betrays any emotion. He chomps rhythmically on his gum, but this morning the new teacher at the daycare smiles at him, and he smiles back. Security. Safety. She feels safe here, thanks to him. The sun shines like it's summer. It is a good day.
Chapter 7. The sun screams through my blinds. I wake up, but make sure to stay in bed until I hear my parents' car back out of the driveway. My mom left me a note. Eat something. Love your mom. She's hovering in absentia. I scarf down the bowl of oatmeal she left for me on the kitchen table, along with a banana, hoping doing at least one thing my mom asks will soothe my conscience. It doesn't. But my feelings of guilt rarely compel me to change my plans, either. I still have an hour and a half before Phil's supposed to pick me up. I'm not sure if breakfast was a good idea, given the way my stomach is churning. I focus on what to wear over my bikini, troublesome even without the buyer's remorse. The temperature is going to hit a ridiculously high 80 degrees for April. It's already a bit muggy. I reach for a crimson cotton sleeveless dress, tie-dyed Indian Bandhini style. The association with the method is unfortunate, because unlike the large, psychedelic deadhead patterns and colors, Bandhini tie-dyes are delicate and intricate. But before putting it on, I hesitate. First, I need a look at myself in just the bikini. In front of the mirror, I wince. My breasts are held back from total exposure by a few inches of string. I double knot the halter at my neck, insurance against accidental breast spillage, then reach for the dress. I step back. This is actually okay. Good, even. With flip-flops, I'm swimming lesson ready. My clothes are, anyway. My phone buzzes. It's Violet. 8 hours later, so it's late afternoon in Paris. I imagine her texting from some cafe at sunset, some French boy hanging over her shoulder, jealous of me on the receiving end. Violet, are you wearing the bikini? Me, why are you yelling? Violet, because that's what I'm going to be doing if you're not in it. Me, I exchanged it for a granny one-piece with a ruffle. Mistake? Violet. Sword emoji, sword emoji. Did you wax? Me. OMG. Eye-rolling emoji. Violet. There better be mascara on those rolling eyes. Waterproof. Me. Yes. Happy? Violet. Me? You're the one kissing two different guys over spring break. Me. One. Violet. I'm aspirationally texting. Me. I'm aspirationally kicking your ass. Violet. Ha ha. Gotta run. Meeting Jean-Paul, who I will definitely be kissing. IRL. Me. I would be disappointed to hear anything else. Blowing a kiss emoji. Violet. Bisou. Blowing a kiss emoji. Heart emoji. When the doorbell rings, I take a last look in the mirror, then take a deep breath before walking down the stairs. I stop short. I spy Phil through the slightly frosted glass panels in our door. He's checking himself out. He runs his fingers through his hair, structuring it just so. I knew that tousle was too perfect to be disinterested, bedhead. Then he breathes into his cupped hand. I bite my lips so I don't laugh and give myself away before he's done primping. Pausing a beat, I open the door and step out into the warm sun.
"Don't worry," Phil says as we walk to his car. "I won't let anything happen to you. Besides, the water's not very deep."
"What do you mean? Where would this not-so-deep water be?"
"You'll see."
"Is it the Y? The Wabanzi Pool?" Phil smiles across the car at me.
"I thought you wanted to go someplace without witnesses present."
After taking a right turn into the Fabian Forest Preserve, Phil follows a side road that runs parallel to the river for nearly half a mile and then parks by the old Japanese garden, which has been closed for over 10 years. The park district didn't have the funds to restore it. The garden is overrun with weeds, the koi pond dried up. Phil parks next to a sign that clearly reads, "No trespassing."
"We're here,"
he says. I grab my bag and get out of the car, though I have no real idea what "here" exactly is. The Japanese garden? Phil takes a plaid blanket and cooler out of the trunk.
"Not exactly. Remember what I said? Trust me."
He leads the way down the dirt path, through the trees that create a perimeter around the garden.
"You know, the entire forest preserve used to be Fabian land. Old man Fabian died without any heirs, so he gave it all to the town. The visitor's center on the other side of the river used to be his main house. He actually built the Japanese garden because he fell in love with the culture when he visited. He wanted to bring a bit of it back home. See the little cottage?"
Phil pauses, pointing to a small stone structure in a little clearing.
"That was his summer retreat. I guess he would ride his horse out here and chill. Basically, it's the original man cave."
I follow his arm and shake my head. "How do you know all this stuff? I had no idea this cottage was even here." He laughs.
"Another school report. 8th grade. Ever since then, I come here when I want to get away."
As we come upon the single-story cottage, I see that there is no glass left in the window panes. Gnarled old vines cover half the facade of the house, and the yellowish stones are smoothed from rain. I imagine the cottage feels haunted at night, but surrounded by trees and the spring sunlight, it is beautiful. So, gothic romance isn't exactly my thing, but if I ever direct one, this is so going to be the spot. I'm thinking Dracula meets Wuthering Heights, but, like, contemporary, where Heathcliff is a vampire, because that would explain why he is such a jerk. I've been taking in the surroundings, sort of forgetting Phil for a moment, while I imagine how to capture the light around the cottage. I pause and look at him. He's just standing there, grinning.
"I have no idea what any of that means, except for vampires."
"What I'm trying to say is, it's amazing." I peer inside. The wood slats on the floor are weathered and worn. A beat-up recliner rests in the corner. There's a fireplace at one end of the main room with a flashlight on the mantel. The inside is blackened with ash and the charred remnants of logs, as if just used. "Do people hang out here?" I ask.
"That's me. I didn't clean out the fireplace last time."
He shrugs.
"Like I said, I come here sometimes."
"But you didn't tell me that you had taken up residence." A vivid image of Phil and Lisa sharing a romantic evening in front of a fire springs to mind. He laughs again, quietly.
"Sometimes I wish I lived here."
"So, should we get started with, you know, the lesson?" I stumble over my words,
wondering if he meant to add he wished he lived here with her. The sooner we get started, the sooner it's over.
Okay.
Phil scrunches his eyebrows together. He leads the way to a larger clearing. As we emerge from the narrow path between the trees, a perfectly round, still pond magically appears. The sun glistens off the water. The truly enchanting part is that there's a small carpet of sand and a folded lawn chair.
Don't tell me. This is your beach.
I'm pretty proud of it. I lugged a few wheelbarrows of sand here from that playground they're building off of Maiden Lane.
You stole sand from little kids.
For a good cause.
Meaning you? I tease.
Well, yeah. But also teaching you how to swim.
Phil walks over to the beach and lofts the plaid blanket in the air. It billows out as he brings it to rest on the sand. I kick off my shoes and settle on my back. The sun warms my skin. He stands over me and takes off his shirt, momentarily blocking my sun. I stare up at him, happy to be wearing sunglasses so he can't see my eyes grow wide.
Is it the water clean?
I ask, not moving. I'm still covered up. I don't know how I can face him in a bikini.
It's spring-fed, so it's relatively clean. I wouldn't drink it, but it's not all gross and leech-infested. At least I don't think it is.
He smirks and runs into the pond with a splash, diving forward and swimming to the middle until the water is up to his chin. Then he raises his hands to show he's standing.
See? This is as deep as it gets.
That's still over my head.
Come on. The water's pretty nice, actually.
I stand up. Phil's hands fall beneath the surface. He treads water, staring at me.
Can you turn around? I'm self-conscious.
Phil does as I ask, but before he turns his face away, I catch a glimpse of that dimple emerging from his smirk. I drop my dress on the blanket, and every inch of my exposed skin blazes red. I sprint into the water for relief.
It's freezing!
I'm in 3.5 feet of cold water, goosebumps popping up all over my skin.
I thought you said it was nice in here.
Phil swims up alongside me.
You'll get used to it. You need to dunk your entire body in. You'll see.
As in, put my head under? As in, get my hair wet?
Getting wet is pretty much a requirement if you're going to learn to swim. I forgot. I have something for you.
Phil swims back to the beach. Thin rivulets of water stream down his back and arms. He plucks the mystery gift from his backpack and wades back toward me. I hope it's an inhaler, because I can't quite breathe.
Goggles, he says, handing them to me. You wear contacts, right? I thought this would make it easier for you.
I put on the goggles. I probably look ridiculous, but I'm impressed at Phil's attention to detail.
Thanks, I whisper.
No problem. Now hold your nose and dunk your head for a second.
I bob up and down a little and then splash into the water. I come up. My eyes are squeezed shut, despite the goggles.
Much better. Now I'm only mildly hypothermic.
I speak through chattering teeth. Phil laughs.
Can you do the dead man's float?
That's the name?
That's terrible marketing.
It's called that because that's how corpses float. You have to float before you can swim.
So, on my stomach? Pretending I'm dead. Phil nods, businesslike.
I won't let you die. Now, take a deep breath and relax your body into the water. Extend your arms in front of you and keep your head down. When you need a breath, come up.
Then he demonstrates. His voice is calm and patient. He shows me exactly how to do everything, flawlessly, athletically. I try to copy him, but how can I? My muscles tense in the water. My jaw tightens, and I pop up after only a few seconds, blowing out the air from my lungs.
Good, he says. Let's do it one more time, except when you need air, raise your head for a breath, and then go back into the float.
He demonstrates again.
You'll drift forward a bit, but don't panic. You can always stand up.
I bite my lip. I can always stand up. I repeat Phil's words as I try again. I manage to float for 3 pop-up breath lengths before inadvertently getting water up my nose. I stand up, gagging and sputtering. Phil gently takes my arm.
It's okay. I'm right here. Try to relax and enjoy the water. Don't overthink it. You won't drown.
How do you know?
You have built-in flotation devices.
Phil eyes my cleavage. My mouth drops open. I immediately cover my chest with my arms. Oh my God! I can't believe you said that! He shrugs with an impish grin.
I'm just stating a fact. As your instructor.
Despite myself, I grin back. I quickly put my face back in the water to hide my reddening cheeks and practice the float for a while longer, until I realize I'm not going to drown. I'm actually floating, in the water, by myself. When I come up for air again, Phil places his hand on my shoulder.
Now, I want you to float on your back. It's the same idea as the dead man's float, but you don't have to hold your breath, and you can keep your eyes open. See?
Phil lies down on the water like it's a feather bed.
You can kick a little if you want to propel yourself.
I imitate Phil's movements, and it sort of works.
Great! Tilt your head all the way back until the water covers your ears. Relax your neck.
I kick my legs and find myself moving softly through the water. Before I know it, I'm parallel with Phil in the middle of the pond.
Isn't this nice?
Phil asks as he gazes up at the few cumulus clouds in the sky.
I could float for hours. It's so relaxing.
I open my eyes to a sky the color of blue cornflowers and treetops swaying in the light breeze. It's quiet all around, except for the sound of our movements in the water. I turn my head and shoulders to look at Phil. My body begins to slip into the pond. Water fills my open mouth. I'm caught by surprise and splash wildly. Phil grabs me, one arm under my legs and the other behind my back, forming a sort of chair for me in his arms.
I got you. Are you okay?
He furrows his brow, and when he looks at me, his green eyes tighten with worry. He draws me a little closer into him. I cough, partly out of embarrassment. Yes, I'm fine. My lungs burn. I hope you were right when you said the water was clean.
You can probably skip the tetanus shot. But I'm sorry. I should have told you to keep your body as horizontal as possible.
I bet you say that to all the girls.
Pretty ballsy talk for someone who can't swim.
Phil loosens his grip on my back as if he might let me fall into the water. Don't! I yell and wrap both my arms around his neck. Goosebumps rise up on every millimeter of my body. My chest smashes up against Phil. He averts his eyes, but tightens his grip around my back. I'm suddenly very aware that my skin is a living organ, because it registers the slight temperature change as his hand edges from cool to warm. I can feel the wrinkles of his pruny fingertips embedding their whorls into my body. The world slows down. My breathing, the journey of the drips of water that trail from his skin onto mine, the rise and fall of his chest, the blink of his eyelids. In the movies, you can achieve slow motion in two ways. First, by overcranking, basically capturing each frame at a much faster rate with your camera than it will be played back on a projector. Then there's time stretching, where you insert new frames in post-production between the ones already filmed, but linger longer on each one. That's what this feels like. But where each of the new frames I add is just a blank screen of longing. I can make it from here. Thanks. I whisper as I slip out of his arms back into the water. In a movie, this would be the moment for the couple. But right now, I'm the only one in this moment. And anyway, you can't have the moment when your feelings are buried so deep you're afraid they'll burn up if they see the light. We wade back to shore. Phil collapses onto the blanket, face up in the afternoon sun. He closes his eyes. I wind my towel tightly around myself and sit down. I pull out my ponytail and comb my fingers through my hair. It falls loose across the width of my back, the wet strands sticking to my body. The sun warms my skin as I tuck my knees up under my chin. Phil's eyes are still closed, and I watch his chest rise and fall with his breaths. Droplets of water on his skin slowly dissolve into the heat. Phil's arm is bent under his head, the muscle in his biceps taut and smooth. I twirl a small section of dripping hair around my index finger and try and force myself to look away and out across the water. It's hopeless. Phil touches the small of my back, startling me.
Are you hungry?
He asks, sitting up. He reaches for the cooler and pulls out sandwiches, a bag of potato chips, and a couple of pops.
Turkey and Swiss. No pork. I remembered.
Thanks, I say, as Phil hands me the sandwich. It's sweet of you. Violet is the only one of my friends who ever thinks about my dietary restrictions.
Swimming always makes me hungry, so I figured I'd bring provisions.
I wasn't exactly swimming. I take a bite, realizing how hungry I am, too.
You'll get there.
I chew for a while, pretending to focus on my food, but really focusing on him. You're a good teacher. You have way more patience than me.
When's our next lesson?
Phil asks. It's the question I've been hoping for all afternoon. On the other hand, it means flailing around in the water again. After the pond hits 90 degrees?
He laughs. That will be never. How about tomorrow? I'm not working until the afternoon. Same time?
I hesitate. I should hesitate, but I can't help myself. I have to be at work at 3.
Perfect. I'll pick you up at 11.
I'll probably regret it, but for now, for a minute, I allow myself to be the character in the romantic movie, the adorkable girl who gets the guy, because this definitely doesn't feel like real life. Not mine, anyway.
His training has prepared him. He's ready. Every day for the last week, he scouted the route, noting when the mail arrived, by what hour the parking lot filled, when the guards went on break and took lunch. From across the street, he watched the cars drive by the manned security gate, a simple red-and-white metal arm operated by one guard in a wooden kiosk. Easy. Today, 4 blocks from the building, he eyes a slow-moving police car in his rearview mirror.
He pulls up to the curb and lets the cop pass, holding his breath, waiting to see if the car circles the block. It doesn't.
Chapter 8. It's Wednesday and freakishly warm, and it's my third swimming lesson. I walk out of my room, rubbing the sleep from my eyes, and bump into my mother, literally.
Assalamu alaikum, Ami.
I sound too chipper.
You are in a fine mood, Beta, my mom replies.
Of course, a wave of suspicion passes over her face.
What are you up to?
Can't I just be in a good mood?
That's more like it,
my mom says, a rare twinkle in her eye. It strikes me as weird that she's not pushing me on this, but then I realize she must think my fine mood is because of Kareem. I wonder if she talked to Kareem's mom, and if they are planning something. Crap. And I can't ask her. Now I'm obsessing. And guilty. She has this uncanny gift of delivering guilt tied up in a bow, and without fail, I accept it. My dad honks from the driveway. My mom kisses me on the cheek.
Your dad is always rushing me.
Kudafiz, Mom.
Kudafiz, Beta. And don't forget.
I know. I'll eat something. The front door closes as I step into the bathroom and look at myself in the mirror. Definitely tanner. One more day of sun and Mom will notice. I'll have to lie again to explain how I could possibly get this tan at the bookstore or at the mall. I don't have a choice. The lies make life easier for everyone. It's not even that I'm interested in someone other than Kareem. That's tiny compared to the big, fat NYU lie of omission. The response deadline is May 1st, only days away. I'm still fantasizing that a deus ex machina will descend from the heavens to resolve the situation. Greek tragedies with their revenge, suffering, and extreme sorrow are roughly equivalent to dealing with my mother, so an intervention from Zeus or Athena seems a fair ask. Of course, I hate when that happens in movies, because it is 100% the opposite of real life. Like, if Lord of the Rings were a documentary, Frodo and Sam would have totally died in the fires of Mount Doom, but instead, giant eagles fly into the end of all things after a fade to black to rescue them. So why didn't Gandalf give the ring to the giant eagles in the first place? This has always bugged me. Whatever, though. Violet and I just watched the trilogy for 12 hours of Aragorn. No regrets. I step into the shower, hoping to wash away my anxiety. It doesn't work. If I don't make NYU happen, I might doom myself to the stay close to home, become a lawyer, and marry a suitable boy life that my parents dream of. I grab a towel as I step out of the shower. I have to tell them, I say out loud, hoping to convince myself, hoping to work up the courage. I take a peek at my phone. 3 missed texts, all from Kareem. Kareem. Morning, sunshine. Kareem. Sleeping in? Kareem. I have a surprise for you. My spirits sink a little lower. He's trying too hard. Death knell. Of course, it's not like I've been discouraging him. I mean, I text flirt and wink my virtual lashes at him. I desire his interest. Basically, I'm leading him on. Now I feel like garbage. At least the texts, while not exactly a deus ex machina, reveal a stark truth. Kareem isn't the one. He hasn't actually done anything wrong, except not be Phil. I know I have to break it off, but it's never been totally on, I guess. We did kiss, though, and it was a good kiss.
better than good. It was romantic. He is romantic. And it's still not enough. I have to tell Kareem the truth about Phil, or I'll be halfway to engaged by next summer. My mom already has visions of a big Indian wedding dancing in her head. I could see it in her eyes when she said goodbye. I fall back on my bed, pulling my knees into the towel knot. A montage of the kiss plays in my brain. The flower petals, the rain, the closeness of Kareem's skin to mine. I close my eyes for a moment, take a deep breath, then another. I trace my collarbone with my index finger. He might not be the one, but so far at least, he's been the only. When I turn to the clock, it's 10:50. Phil will be here in 10 minutes. Whirling around the room, I throw on my clothes, pull my hair tight into a low ponytail, and snag my bag and camera. Hearing Phil's car in the driveway, I look in the mirror and frown, then slather on lip gloss. It'll have to do, because the doorbell is ringing. My camera rolls as Phil and I walk toward the garden. He pushes open the hip-high, rusty iron gate. I zoom in on the metal curlicues and then pan up from the gravel path to Phil's face. He gazes directly into the camera, reveals the dimple, and begins his smooth narration.
We're in the Fabian Forest Preserve.
He talks and walks, and he's not self-conscious at all. The camera loves him. He's an easy subject to follow. He points out the sun-bleached wooden moon bridge, slats missing, that arches across the dried-up pool. When he points, I train my camera on the knotty dead trunks of Japanese maples and the cherry and ginkgo trees, gnarled limbs reaching toward blue sky. The buds on a weeping spruce cascade over a small embankment, a little hint of life beneath the desiccated vines and leaves. He knows all their names. When we reach the foot of the bridge, Phil pauses, sweeping his hand over the vista, as he talks about the vision of Taro Otsuka, Fabian's private gardener who designed this place. I walk up a gentle slope that leads to the bridge to get a long shot of Phil with the garden around him. I lose myself in his voice, imagining the garden in full bloom. Pink cherry blossoms, burgundy leaves of the maple tree, yellow forsythia, red azaleas. I'm not paying any attention to where my feet are. My flip-flop slips on some loose earth, and all at once I'm skidding downhill.
Careful,
Phil says. He's at my side in a flash.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. I was still rolling, so it'll be a good action sequence. Phil laughs.
Is that all you think about?
Not all, I manage to whisper. I bite my tongue and look away. I don't trust myself not to blurt something ridiculous.
You're bleeding. Your knee.
A drop of blood trickles down my leg. Crap! I don't suppose you have a tissue. Phil rifles through his backpack, pulls out a napkin, and holds it to my knee. For a moment, I forget about the sting of the cut and the embarrassment of my awkward nerd crash. Phil's hand is on my knee. Separated by a questionably clean napkin, but still.
I have a first aid kit in the cabin, he says, blotting and squinting at the wound. Are you okay to walk?
I almost laugh. I think I can make it, I say dryly. He helps me up and wraps his arm around my waist. The gesture is completely unnecessary, but I pretend my little injury is maybe worse than I thought. I luxuriate in the warmth of Phil's arm holding me. When we arrive at the stone cottage, he directs me to the recliner and disappears into the small back room, a simple kitchenette, and emerges with the first aid kit.
You're such a Boy Scout.
Always prepared.
Phil uses alcohol-dipped swabs to clean the small gash on my leg. Ouch!
Sorry. I want to make sure it won't get infected. It's not too deep.
Phil slathers bacitracin on the cut and covers it with a couple bandages, then uses his water bottle to rinse away the dry blood from my leg.
We shouldn't go into the water today. The pond is pretty clean, but there's still random stuff floating around in there, and those bandages aren't waterproof.
Okay, Doc. Should I take 2 aspirin and call you in the morning?
Aspirin is a blood thinner. If it hurts, take ibuprofen.
You really know your first aid.
Hope so. I want to study to be an EMT. I have ever since middle school.
I'm taken aback. There is so much I don't know about Phil. So much more I want to know. Really? I had no idea. Phil walks toward one of the painless windows.
My dad had a heart attack when I was in 7th grade.
What? Oh my God. So glad it all turned out okay.
Yeah, me too. It's totally because of these 2 EMTs. He wouldn't have made it without them. The 2 of us were at home, shooting hoops in the driveway, and suddenly my dad starts clutching his arm and having these chest pains. I totally froze, but my dad told me to call 911. I did, and when they got here, they basically diagnosed it, stabilized him, and 10 minutes later they were wheeling him into the surgery.
That must have been terrifying.
It was. I don't think I've ever felt so scared and helpless in my life. And I never want to feel that way again. All I could think was, I didn't want my dad to die. I didn't know what it was called then, but the EMTs basically performed an ECG, an electrocardiogram, right there, transmitted the data to the hospital, and an interventional cardiologist was waiting for us when they wheeled him in. They got a balloon to open his blocked artery in less than 60 minutes from when I called. That's what saved his life. I'll never forget how calm and together and fast the EMTs were. After they got my dad secured in the ambulance, the EMT who rode in the back with me made sure I was okay and explained everything to me. She didn't talk down to me like I was some dumb kid, which is what I basically felt like. She was so kind and understanding and answered all my questions and stayed with me until my mom and brother got to the hospital.
She sounds amazing.
She was. After that, I wanted to learn everything about what happened to my dad, so I researched everything I could, and I, like, put myself in charge of his rehab at home and was on him all the time about his eating habits.
So that's your origin story, I say, brushing my hand against his shoulder.
I guess it is,
he says, a shy smile emerging on his face, which had turned serious when talking about his dad. So if we're not going swimming, do you want to head back? I pray the answer is no.
Not unless you want to. I'm not working till later, he says.
Me neither.
Cool. I left our lunch cooler in the car. I'll be right back.
The door shuts behind him. The spare room is shadowy, even with the sunlight filtering through the small windows. I notice a rolled-up sleeping bag in a corner, along with an inflatable camping pillow. I get up to explore and step into the little kitchen. Cans of food line a built-in wooden shelf. There are a couple gallons of water, a thermos, and a large plastic cup filled with plastic forks and knives. The ultimate rustic bachelor pad, I think. I wonder how much time Phil spends here alone versus with Lisa. Lisa.
She probably wouldn't be happy knowing I'm here now. Best not to dwell on it. I take a blanket and walk outside, spreading it over a grassy patch in front of the cottage. I lie back. Passing clouds cast shadows across my face. I shut my eyes.
Maya?
My eyelids flutter open. Phil's face floats over mine.
I thought for a second you'd fallen asleep.
He settles in next to me and hands me a sandwich. We eat quietly for a moment. I catch him eyeing my cut, making sure the bandage is in place. Can I ask you a question? He looks up at me.
Sure.
Why haven't you told anyone you want to be an EMT? I'm sure your parents must be thrilled.
They say they're cool with it, but I think they secretly wish I would go to school, but then come back home and run our family gas station with my brother. And pretty much everyone else assumes that, too. I mean, some of my friends. They're already making plans to come back to Batavia after college. That's just not what I want.
And by friends, I'm assuming he means Lisa. So, the old expectation thing. Believe me, I totally understand. Phil nods.
It's not that my parents are upset. They're actually pretty happy that I'm interested in something other than playing college football. But they wish I wasn't going so far away. My mom has been researching all these Midwestern places where I could get certified.
Where are you going? I feel like I should know this, but realize I never bothered to ask.
Green Mountain College in Vermont.
Sounds all outdoorsy and autumnal. The tone in Phil's voice lifts.
It's awesome. But you know, in the wilderness, I'll major in adventure recreation and take classes in emergency medical services, so when I graduate, I can be a paramedic or work with programs like Outward Bound.
Adventure recreation?
I know. Ridiculous name, right? My mom asked me why I couldn't have adventure and recreation closer to home and someplace cheaper. But it's one of the best programs out there that teaches survival skills.
Like surviving a bear attack?
When I find out how, I'll let you know.
I can't wait. I place my hand on his arm. He doesn't flinch. But I still don't get why you won't tell any of your friends.
There's no football team.
This comes as almost more of a surprise than anything else Phil has told me, because he's literally the poster boy for Batavia High School football. But don't you want to play football? I mean, at all?
I was recruited to play football at a couple smaller Division I schools. Eastern has a really good coach. That could have meant a partial scholarship, but I honestly don't care if I don't play football at school. Like I told you, it wasn't even my first choice of sport. It sort of just happened. I love it, but now everyone expects me to play. But I'm ready to move on. Try something different.
If your parents are okay with it, then you're set, right? Does Lisa know? I don't know why I say Lisa's name. This time, the space between me and Phil... It's like this perfect, intricate diorama. And when I say her name, it reminds me that we're just paper figures taped inside a shoebox. He shakes his head and lowers his eyes, twirling a few blades of grass between his fingers.
No. You're the first person I've told outside my family.
A tiny flicker of hope lights up inside me. If Lisa doesn't know about his college plans, she and Phil can't be that serious anymore, right? This could mean... something.
On the other hand, I am certain they haven't broken up. Violet is definitely certain, and I rely on her to determine the truth regarding all affaires de cœur, especially long distance from Paris. Maybe I'm just another one of Phil's secrets. He lies back and stares into the sky.
It's complicated.
How?
She's going to Eastern. She thinks I'm going with her. I know I need to tell her. I just can't bring myself. I've been avoiding it.
Tell her what you told me. She'll understand. I clamp my mouth shut, but too late. The words are already out. Not only am I giving him relationship advice, but it's totally hypocritical, because it's advice I'm dishing out, but totally not able to take from myself. I'm hiding from my parents, and to be honest, from Kareem, too. Phil's hiding from Lisa. We both have truths that we're hiding from practically everyone else except each other.
Doubt it. She is not into the outdoors at all. I mean, maybe an outdoor mall.
I see a chance to ask Phil the question that's been gnawing at me for 3 days. I've been holding back because I know I shouldn't fish in none of my business waters. Now I cast my line. Lisa must love this place, though. It pretty much defines outdoorsy. Phil is silent for a moment.
I've never brought her here,
he says finally. My heart thumps against my ribcage like it has wings. My brain floods with words, but I don't blurt them out. I hold on to the stillness of this moment, waiting for what he will say next.
I've never brought anyone here. Except you. You're the only person I can talk to about this stuff. Tom won't get me not wanting to play football. You know Tom, right? He's going to Eastern, too, along with Megan. All of them. Tom, Megan, Lisa. Especially Lisa. Have this idea that we'll be together there and after college be back here.
Phil's voice trails off. I shake my head. I do know Tom, but in my mind he's pretty much indistinguishable from the rest of Phil's teammates. They're your friends. They'll get it.
Maybe.
Phil turns his attention away from the clouds and focuses on me.
Remember the other day when we were at the cafe, and you were saying how you wanted to be in New York and were sick of being so different here? I got that.
My heart is still beating fast. You get wanting to go to New York and being the only Muslim girl in school? I make a joke, but I'm keenly aware that Phil understands me more than anyone else, because he's keeping a secret, too. Maybe more than one. Phil laughs and sits up.
Exactly. It's cool that my whole family stayed in Batavia, but I want to see what else is out there. I want to take some time to explore, on my own, out in the wild. I'll carry everything I need to live in my backpack.
My talk with Kareem springs to mind, but I don't see him. I don't even hear his voice. I see only Phil in front of me. You want to go to the woods to live deliberately. You want to suck the marrow out of life. He blinks at me.
That sucking marrow part went over my head, but yeah, that's the gist of it.
I'm quoting Thoreau.
That explains it.
Phil laughs again and fishes out a worn piece of paper from his wallet.
I want to show you something. A couple seasons ago, Coach Roberts had this sports psychologist come and talk to us, and he did this exercise where he told us to write down 3 goals on a piece of paper, and then fold it up and put it away. We weren't supposed to show it to anyone.
Of course, we did anyway. Turned out that we all wrote pretty much the same thing. We wanted to win homecoming, or bench press more weight, or set the school rushing record.